It was extraordinary because it was an opportunity to see the beginning stages of a lesbian and gay rights movement in a very different culture.
Idapalooza Fruit Jam will transform Ida's 240 acres into a sonic dreamland.
You better get used to it. You better get used to it. You better get used to it.
Oh, my God.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The Netherlands creates the world's first full marriage equality, an American in Taiwan helps inaugurate Pride, and communal campers feast on music and home cooking. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Chase Schulte.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 16th, 2000. The Parliament of the Netherlands voted by an overwhelming 107-33 this week to extend legal marriage to same-gender couples. This will mark the first time in the world that gays and lesbians have been granted full equal marriage rights under the same statutes governing heterosexual marriage. Assent from the upper house is considered a formality. In fact, legislators were ready to adopt this law as much as 3 years ago, and while the move this week was big news to the rest of the world, the Netherlands took it so much for granted that the vote went almost unreported there. 2 years ago, the Netherlands began registered partnerships for gays and lesbians with almost all the benefits and responsibilities of marriage. The Parliament acted to remove most of the remaining restrictions on adoptions so that registered partnerships were very nearly equivalent to legal marriage already. When the new law goes into effect, registered partners will have the option of converting their relationships to marriages. Ironically, it appears that the biggest difference is in the divorce process. However, even married gays and lesbians will not be able to adopt children from foreign countries because of possible international conflicts.
One lesbian couple's bid to be recognized as married was rejected this week by Israel's Attorney General Eliakim Rubinstein's office. Dorit Lipman and Anya Hake had filed their petition with the Ramat Gan Family Court, which asked the Attorney General for a ruling. The response was that the family court is restricted to resolving disputes within recognized marriages, and this was a case in which there was no marriage and no dispute. The ruling also found that even if the family court approved the petition, it would not affect Hake's status as a foreign national. The ruling said that same-gender relationships raise difficult ethical and societal issues.
But seven lesbian couples in Colorado will continue to be jointly recognized on birth certificates as the parents of their children. The Colorado Supreme Court has declined an appeal by the state's Department of Public Health, which claimed that two judges in Boulder had overstepped their authority to create a new legal relationship. Instead, both the state's high court and its appeals court let stand judgments by district court judges Roxanne Balin and Morris Sandstead. In putting the second mothers on the birth certificates, the judges cited the state's Uniform Parentage Act, which provides for individuals not biologically related to a child to assume parental status in some circumstances. In most of the cases, the children were conceived by anonymous donors through artificial insemination. Activists cheered the legal move, but fully expect that in the coming session there will be action from the conservative majority in the Colorado legislature.
The U.S. Senate has never had an open gay or lesbian in its ranks, but this week Democrat Ed Flanagan became the first open gay to receive a major party nomination for a Senate seat. Flanagan was already the first open gay or lesbian in the U.S. to win statewide elective office when he was reelected to his current post of Vermont State Auditor after publicly identifying himself as a gay man. This week, he won a narrow victory in Vermont's Democratic primary. His Senate race will be even tougher, though, as he faces gay-supportive Republican two-term incumbent Jim Jeffords, who's already raised nearly $2 million for his campaign.
Electioneering brought the Boy Scouts of America's policy of excluding gays to the floor of the U.S. House this week. Because of the discriminatory policy, 2 months ago, California Democratic Representative Lynn Woolsey introduced a bill to withdraw the Scouts' congressional charter, an entirely ceremonial document held by almost 100 charitable, educational, and patriotic groups. The bill had only 8 co-sponsors and had not been before any committee for hearings or votes. But House Republican leader Dick Armey brought it to the floor, saying, "I scheduled this bill to demonstrate the lack of support for those who have declared open season on the Boy Scouts," and calling the bill an unjustified, despicable attack by radical extremists. Armey gave less than 24 hours' notice of the move to Woolsey, who was the only Congress member to speak on the floor in support of her bill. A long line of Republicans stood to denounce the Democrats and praise the Boy Scouts. With every member of Congress facing re-election in 2 months, the bill was crushed by a vote of 362-12, with 50 Democrats and 1 Republican present, but abstaining.
More significantly this week, Armey allowed for the first time ever a House floor debate and vote on a measure that would add sexual orientation as a category protected by federal hate crimes law. By a margin of 10%, Congress members voted to instruct the House-Senate Conference Committee to retain the hate crimes language the Senate had added as an amendment to a defense spending bill. 41 Republicans joined the Democrats in support of the hate crimes measure, which the Clinton administration has lobbied hard for over the last few years. Although this floor vote was hailed as historic and encouraged activists, Republican leaders have given clear statements that the hate crimes measure will not be enacted as a rider to the defense spending bill, although they may consider it in another context. The administration's proposal would also add gender and disability to federal hate crimes law and greatly expand the situations in which federal authorities could investigate and prosecute hate crimes.
But in Europe, it was the authorities themselves who were the threat to gays and lesbians in 3 locales. The Pride celebration in Belarus had already lost its climactic parade when Minsk authorities denied a permit, but then police acted to close down the other Pride festivities. First, they pressured owners of the venue for the big opening dance to end it early. Then, Minsk police evicted participants from the building Pride organizers had rented for seminars and film screenings and shut down phone service to their office. When Pride Chair Edvard Tarletsky tried to file a complaint at City Hall, he was barred from entering the building.
In France, officials in Bourges have acted to close down one gay club for a month and to shorten another's hours for what they called nocturnal disturbance of the peace. That sparked a protest rally by 400 young people. It also led a half dozen gays, including the owners of the clubs, to begin what's planned to be a 2-week occupation of Bourges' 12th century cathedral.
On the Greek island of Lesbos, now known as Mytilene, but historic home to the poet Sappho herself, the mayor of Aressos tried to obtain a court order to bar a tour group of about 100 British lesbians. Offended by the promotional materials organizers designed for use in Britain that described the area as a paradise of gay love, Mayor Polydoros Abatsis threatened hefty lawsuits and even criminal charges against them. But apparently, cooler heads prevailed. The tour organizers apologized, the court order was denied, and the lesbian group began their Women's Week celebration at the Aegean Resort.
In the U.S., this week marked the premiere of a new syndicated television show for Dr. Laura Schlesinger, despite months of protests across the nation against the homophobic statements of the top-rated radio talk show host. Protest demonstrations in more than 30 cities around the nation greeted Schlesinger's TV debut. It's been known that Schlesinger won't be breathing a word about homosexuality for at least her first 3 weeks on TV, but most critics felt her handlers went too far in trying to tone down the outspoken Schlesinger. In a word, they found her boring. Despite the free publicity generated by national protests, the TV show opened to very low ratings in a market where talk shows in general are already fading. The premiere revealed for the first time just what corporations are sponsoring the show. It turned out to be a lineup resembling late night on local cable, dominated by sales through toll-free phone numbers. Those national brands which did appear seem to have done so unintentionally as part of larger media buys. More than a dozen sponsors immediately disassociated themselves from the show after its first airing, and at least a couple of political candidates felt they'd been damaged by stations slotting their campaign ads during the Dr. Laura show.
And finally, it was a very gay night at the 52nd Annual Academy of Television Arts and Sciences Emmy Awards. Accepting Best Director in a Comedy Series for Fox's Malcolm in the Middle, Todd Holland's thanks included My Sweetie Scotch. Vanessa Redgrave won Best Supporting Actress in a TV Movie for her role in HBO's lesbian trilogy If These Walls Could Talk 2. Although he wasn't present to accept them, cross-dressing British comic Eddie Izzard won both Best Performance and Best Writing in a Variety program for his HBO special, Dressed to Kill, beating out shows with big teams of writers and vastly larger budgets. The big winner for the evening among the comedies was NBC's sophomore sitcom Will and Grace, the first U.S. series with an openly gay male title role. The show went in with 11 nominations, more than any other comedy, including all the major categories except writing. It won in three big ones: Best Comedy Series, Best Supporting Actress for Megan Mullally as Karen, and Best Supporting Actor for Sean B. Hayes as Jack, Will's irrepressibly flamboyant gay friend. Hayes was stunned by his honor, and unlike his talkative character, was nearly at a loss for words. Backstage, he was asked how Jack might respond to winning an Emmy. Hayes said, "I don't think he'd say anything. He'd scream so loud the dogs would run."
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 16th, 2000. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Chase Schulte.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
We've got two of the gayest moments from what had to be the gayest Emmy Awards telecast ever. The first was the patter among the four Will and Grace actors before they presented one of the evening's awards.
We are very fortunate to be working at a time when the networks are brave enough to put a show like Will and Grace on the air.
Well said, Eric. One can only imagine what the television landscape might have looked like had gay-themed shows always been accepted.
Well, that's true, Meg. We might have had shows like I Dream of Johnny.
The Lesbionic Woman.
Yes. Ozzy and Harry.
Maud.
The courtship of Eddie's father by his bachelor friend, Rick. Chico on the man.
Little bathhouse on the prairie.
Mm-hmm.
Frasier.
And when Will and Grace won for Best Comedy Series, co-creator, producer, writer Max Muchnick's thank you speech had both humor and heart.
Oh, my God. She is so beautiful. And as a gay man, I cannot believe that I'm saying this, but I think I finally met a girl that I want to sleep with. Thank you to everyone at NBC, and a deep and heartfelt thanks to the members of the Academy. This award really indicates a whole new meaning to the phrase acceptance speech. Thank you very much.
Love you, Olivia.
There's a hoe down there. There's a hoe down there. There's a hoe down, hoe down, hoe down there. There's a hoe down there.
If rural Tennessee seems like a strange place for a queer music festival, you're in for a big surprise later in the program. But first, a first-of-its-kind Pride event was held earlier this month in Taiwan, and American writer Michael Bronski and legal activist Nan Hunter were invited to participate in the festivities held in and funded by the city of Taipei. I talked this week with Nan Hunter about her experiences there.
It was my first trip to Taiwan. It was Michael's first trip to Taiwan. It was my first trip to Asia. I believe it was also Michael's first trip to Asia. It was extraordinary. It was particularly exciting because it was an opportunity to see the beginning stages of a lesbian and gay rights movement in a very different culture. It was just a fascinating and very, very educative experience.
Now, as I understand it, there are no legal sanctions against homosexuality in Taiwan.
There's no criminal law against same-sex sexual conduct in Taiwan. But there is also no anti-discrimination law. There is a very, very strong sense of reticence and social pressure to not be open about one's sexuality. So on the one hand, the movement has not had to deal with arrest for sexual behaviors, and to the extent that the U.S. movement had to in the early years. But there is also a very, very strong tension between the desire of people to be able to live openly and the desire and fear of many people about the kind of social ostracism that would lead to if they did. Family pressure is extremely strong, and it seemed to be a very frequent occurrence that some of the leaders, actually, of the lesbian and gay rights groups in Taiwan were not out to their family, even though in a number of instances it seemed like as is true for many Americans, it seemed like the families had to know, just as a matter of logic, but nothing had been officially said. And that was a very common situation.
So tell us a little something about those history-making Pride events.
It was really a two-part public event associated with a lesbian and gay forum. The first day was a festival that was not only out in the open, but it was out in one of the most popular, nicest parts of the city of Taipei. It was the Warner Movie Theater Mall, basically, which is in a very nice middle-class kind of fashionable place with lots of nice shops and so on around this plaza. And the festival was in the plaza, and there were, oh, I would say 15 or 20 booths set up lining both sides of this courtyard with various lesbian, run by various lesbian and gay organizations, which was an amazing and an extremely courageous step out of the closet for the folks who were at these booths, because they were not in, you know, any kind of little sort of dingy or out of the way gay spot in the city. There's a little small street where there's a gay bookstore and a gay cafe across the street from each other, and this did not happen there. It happened right out in the open, the equivalent of probably Fifth Avenue or something in New York City. And so that was really quite brave. And there was a stage set up, and there were some short speeches and a lot of music and comedy and just a lot of fun stuff. And so there were hundreds of people who walked through this area during the day of the festival. And, of course, it was impossible to know who was gay and who wasn't, which was part of the point. It was sort of, if you were going on Saturday afternoon to this shopping area, which a lot of people do, then you really could not avoid walking through the midst of this lesbian and gay festival. So it was really quite wonderful, and there was just a great sense of fun and celebration, and people's spirits were just, you know, flying, you know, as a result of this festival. The next day, there was a forum, much more formal event, that was sponsored by the city government of Taipei, which was, again, really an historic step to have that official endorsement and acknowledgement. And it was held in the City Hall of Taipei in this very formal auditorium space. And there, I would say about 400 people attended, which again was remarkable. And that's where the formal speeches were. There were two panels, the history of the two gay movements, the history of the gay movement in the U.S. and the history of the movement there. And then there was a panel on law and human rights. And that was the event that the mayor of Taipei joined us for at the end. His government, his city government, had sponsored the event, and he came to the event at the very end and spoke quite movingly, I thought, about the importance of diversity and human rights.
More with American Nan Hunter about Taiwan's first ever Pride celebration, capped by the historic meeting by gay and lesbian activists with the Republic of China's President Chen Shui-bian.
The president of Taiwan did not want to be upstaged by the mayor of Taipei, his political rival.
Next time on This Way Out.
Hi, this is John Stamp, Bernadette, in The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, on This Way Out. the International Lesbian and Gay Radio News Magazine.
What began as an eight-person commune in 1993 has blossomed into an annual Tennessee gathering for sharing songs, stories, rustic camping, and homegrown food. Reporter Carrie James is headed for the site of this week's Ida Palooza Fruit Jam Queer Music Festival.
Deep in the woods of Tennessee, the folks at Ida, a queer artist community, are at it again. This year, from September 20th through 24th, Ida Palooza Fruit Jam will transform Ida's 240 acres into a sonic dreamland.
Ooh, you better get used to it. You better get used to it. You better get used to it. You better get used to it.
Musical queers from around the United States and beyond will get together to jam. 4 days of camping, rustic communal living, and musical expression, which will build up to Saturday, the day-long concert and festival. Musicians will rock, croon, and wail amidst the flowers, vegetables, and forest of Ida.
We've hosted so many different fabulous events over the years, and this year I'm real excited that we're having the Ida Palooza Fruit Jam on our farm.
Maxine, who has lived at Ida for over 6 years, is one of the event organizers.
We can wake up and have all these amazing musicians from around the country perform, people like Pistol Pete and Pop Gun Paul of New Orleans.
Even if I always talk real deep, even if I learn to swagger on my feet, even if I held my cigarette just right, started getting into lots of fights. No matter what I do, it's a given fact. No matter how I look, no matter how I act, I'll never, ever, ever, ever be straight.
Impact News describes Pete and Paul as a southern-sounding stew of country, blues, gospel, folk, and rock. Their fans are attracted to their touching ballads and provocative lyrics.
Jesus loves all the little fairies of the field and the stream, both the seen and unseen. Jesus loves all the little fairies of the cities and the towns, both the hidden and the found. And Jesus loves all the little fairies wherever they may be, inside you or inside me.
When we began to conceive of the Fruit Jam, one of the things that was most thrilling was the realization that we were creating such a unique event, a place where men and women could join together, and whatever gender people happen to identify themselves as. So as we began to invite artists, we got such an incredible response from both female, male, and other artists who wanted to be a part of something like this out in the woods. And I remember receiving a really sweet letter from Angela Mater from Atlanta talking about how she was exploring gender-bending qualities and so forth in her music and would just love to play at the Fruit Jam.
Still walking these southern streets, thinking just around the corner and there I'll be. So much in love as I held your hand down in the Castro, just around the corner.
Founded in 1993, Ida is a group of 8 friends who share their lives and creative endeavors with a focus on nature, crafts, and performance arts. Most of the residents came from urban areas to the secluded hills of Tennessee to become more connected to the land by growing food, building fanciful outhouses, and chopping firewood. Ida, once an acronym for Idle Dandy Acres, is affiliated with a loose network of growing radical fairy communities. Tom Foolery, a juggler who moved to Ida from San Francisco, is on the line. Tom, what is it that you find most interesting or unique about Ida and events like the Ida Palooza Fruit Jam?
You know, one of the things I like most about living at Ida is the participatory nature of all the events there. So I'm looking forward at Idapalooza to jamming with friends old and new around the fire pit. I'm looking forward to hiking out to the waterfall and singing underneath it with all kinds of, wacky folks who are coming out there.
So what about people who are not so musically inclined? Are they welcome to come too?
Oh, yeah, of course. Even when we have an event that says it's a music event, a lot of people come who might not necessarily identify as musicians and can find lots of ways to participate. For instance, Carl Max coming up from New Orleans to do a fabulous dinner theater musical performance. And so along with decorations for his performance that night, we're going to be making beautiful dinners. And you certainly don't need to have any kind of musical talent to cook with the dinners with us and create those sorts of things. So there's a wide range of possibilities for people, even if they don't identify as a musician.
From New Orleans, the marimba magic of Carl Mack will grace Thursday evening's dinner. Atlanta's own Adodi Muse will present performance poetry, singing, and rapping. Yolanda, Vermont's premier drag queen, will also rock the stage.
Oh, because I'm an alien love child. Don't you know that I'm an alien love child?
Well, I think the best reason to come to the Idapalooza Fruit Jam is because it's going to be a blast. I want to meet you. I want to dance with you. I want to walk through the woods with you. I hope that by the end of the week, we'll all have gotten to know Bitch and Animal coming down from New York real well so that we can all sing along when they take the stage and sing their Drag King Bar song.
Well, I was drunk and I was bored and he was cute, so I was lured at the Drag King Bar last night. Where all the boys are really girls and the fags about their pearls at the Drag King Bar last night.
For more information on Idapalooza, call 615-597-4409 or email idapalooza@yahoo.com.
That report by Carrie James at Idapalooza in Smithville, Tennessee. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Chase Schulte, Graham Underhill, Chris Ambidge, Jason Lynn, Brian Nunes, Rex Walkner, and Carrie James contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from the Gill Foundation and the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation by Planet Out, from designated contributions by Uncommon Cloud Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For audio cassette information or with any questions or comments about This Way Out, please email us at tworadio@aol.com, visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. And please be sure to include the call letters of this station. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. For Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We all thank you for listening on CKUV Winnipeg, Manitoba, KOPN Columbia, Missouri, WTIP Grand Marais, Minnesota, and more than 100 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And everybody's going to stay tuned.